Welcome to Business Game Changers, where you'll hear expert tips on the big issues and the hottest trends to level up your business game. If you're building a career or building a business, this is Must Hear Radio. Here's your host, Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. Sarah Westall here. World Bank Insider. Currency reset is 95% likely, according to Karen Hudis. She was a World Bank attorney for 20 years, and she will explain the process behind the currency reset that she believes is being planned. She also talks about the corruption that she witnessed at the World Bank and amongst the largest global banks. It is pretty incredible, some of her stories that she's going to talk about. She just lays it all out there on the line. She also talks about the IMF and the World Bank functions and the power structure. And for those of us who really want to know the details of the Federal Reserve, she explains who the four owners of that private corporation is. She has studied law school, or she studied at Yale Law School, and also economics at the University of Amsterdam. And one of the amazing things that she did, back in 2007, she warned Congress that due to mass corruption in the United States, that the United States would lose their right to appoint the world president. And her warning was proven true in 2010. We actually lost the right to appoint the World Bank's president. And obviously that's going to fundamentally alter the United States' influence over world finance. This is a really incredible interview. She just lays it all out there, and she has a lot of bombshells and a lot of things that she says is going on. And one of the amazing things is that she claims that she has documented proof of everything she's saying. And so you can go to her website and see the proof there. And if her website doesn't specifically have a document that proves what she's saying, she will personally email it to you. So that's pretty incredible. So I'm pretty excited about airing this interview, just because there's so many amazing things that she brought to the table. But before we hear from her, we talk to Tom Shepard, who is the founder and CEO of Shepard Financial. And we have our Evolving with Money series, and he will continue on with the 7 personality traits that we have and how it affects your behavior. And you can see more about Tom at his website at shepherdfinancial.com, and I'll have that information on my radio page as well and on my website where you can get his information. But before this all ends today, we have a packed show, because we also have Thomas McGrath, who is the founder of Social Sweepster. And this is a really good tool, especially if you have college kids, or if you are in college, or if you just kind of lived a wild and crazy life there on the side. This service and tool helps you monitor and clean up your online presence. It uses advanced image recognition technology to clean up your image all over the internet. And it's really great if your college kid is out at a party or something, and they might not even be participating, but if there's somebody in the background with weed or with drinking, it can trigger that for you. It'll flag it, and you can get those things removed off the social media networks. And you can learn more about Social Sweepster as well on their website, and I'll have more information about them on my radio page. But for now, we are going to welcome Tom Shepard to the program. Hi, Tom. Welcome back to the program.
And it's good to be back again.
Let's hear about some of these other natures that you have. We got into the react nature, and you explained what these were. Now, what is some of these other ones? Spend and earn. Earn is a worker, right?
Yeah, earn is a worker. So the second nature comes out of, you know, if we were to graph you earning money and spending money, you'd have enough, but you wouldn't have it all the time. It would be kind of an up and down relationship with money. So the spender, another name for that might be the feeler. So lots of people make decisions about money based on how they feel. They want to use money to make themselves feel better, or make other people feel better. And so that's sort of the second relationship. And I think last week we talked about how they all have a positive and a negative. So just because you come into the office and we do this little test on you and it says that maybe you're a spender, maybe that's your dominant nature, it doesn't mean that you're doomed. You know, we all have to spend money. The trick is learning how to spend it really well.
And all of these are neutral. I remember you saying that last week they're neutral. So it's not necessarily bad. It's just learning how to deal with it.
Yeah. And for some people, when they just finally, you know, it's like a light bulb going off and you see, now I know where I am. Now I know why I make the decisions I do. And the real power is not just knowing what your nature is. It's knowing that there are other natures that are just as acceptable. And that in order to achieve a higher level of you, you almost have to use some of these others and develop a second nature in order to raise your game.
Okay, well then we're going to learn all about some of these other natures as well next week. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Remember to go to my website to get more information on Shepherd Financial. And they have a tool that you can use on their website to see what they think you most likely are from a personality trait. I recommend trying that out. It's really insightful. So now we're going to welcome Karen Hudis to the program. Hi, Karen. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on, Sarah. Glad to be with you.
You are working on the Global Debt Facility and trying to educate people on what's going on there. Can you explain what's going on?
Yes. The Global Debt Facility, that's a mouthful, but it's basically the world's gold, the monetary gold reserves, the gold that's supposed to be in Fort Knox. Guess what? It's not in Fort Knox. It's in that Global Debt Facility.
And how do you know that? Are there documents all over the place that show that or what?
There are documents. They're not all over the place because it was hidden. There are documents that were signed by Dwight Eisenhower and Truman at the end of World War II that put the gold into hiding for 50 years. They wanted to do that so that when the gold came out after 50 years, it was going to be free and clear. Nobody could claim it was theirs. Because if you say you own something and you haven't got your hands on it after 50 years, you've lost your claim.
Oh,
so that's why. But the documents are very much there. And recently, people have been trying to claim that it's theirs. So there's a lot of documents, including a letter from the Chinese to John Kerry dated the 22nd of May that just came out. And I've put that out for people to read.
Okay, well, great. Okay. Interesting. So where is it and what's the deal with all this?
A lot of the gold is buried in the Philippines. It was put into the Philippines because Ferdinand Marcos was the first lawyer that set up that trust. And do you remember Typhoon Haiyun? And then the U.S. military came. They could tell where the gold was because the satellites have
radar.
Oh, they
radar. Can see it. Yeah.
They know very well where the gold is. So there, and some people were complaining that military helicopters were trying to transport that gold. Gold is very heavy. Some of those helicopters fell down. So what I did was I filed a claim with the insurance companies that that insure that gold. Lincoln was one of them. And I told the military that they were going to start World War III if they were stealing the gold that didn't belong to them. They had no right to do that. And then I tried to get that audited by the Marines, because the Marines tend to be a little more straight than some of the other military.
Sure.
And instead, what happened was John Reimer, who's the inspector general in the Department of Defense, said that that was for him to handle. And I told John Reimer, actually, I've already been trying to get John Reimer court-martialed, because there have been a lot of military heroes that are fired under false pretenses without following the personnel policies of the military.
And why,
John Reimer is the one who's letting that happen.
And they're fired because they're going against what they want them to do.
They're fired because they're refusing to nuke citizens.
Oh.
They're fired because they're refusing to have a first strike against the Russians. They're fired because they don't want to put us into World War III.
So there's a lot of people that are just putting their foot down and saying, I don't want to do these things. And they're struggling to get people to be, quote unquote good soldiers from their perspective, because enough people are saying, hey, this is evil and I'm not going to do it.
Well, that's not the way it's working, Sarah. The way it's working is that we've actually got a group that's in control in all of the countries that are just putting our foot down, because the culprits that are trying to start World War III, those are the bankers. There's something called the Bank for International Settlements. That's a consortium of 60 central banks, including the Federal Reserve. Those are the culprits. There are three mathematicians in Switzerland at the Federal Institute of Technology that did a study. They took the data of who owned all of the 40,000 companies on the capital markets, and they found out that there's one conglomerate. You know, people say the banks that are too big to fail, it's actually really only one bank.
Oh, they really?
They've taken directors and they've put them in strategic places, interlocking directors. So you've got the same directors. And at the top of this conglomerate, you've got four mega companies: State Street, Fidelity, Vanguard, and BlackRock. Those are the owners of the Federal Reserve. And then you've got other people behind those groups.
Those four funnel up to one?
Yes. So and these people have bought up all of the media, the mainstream media, and a lot of the alternative media on the internet. But they haven't managed to clamp it all down. And so those of us that are, you know, have been studying are just feeding information from one to the other. And the most important piece of information that I'm going to give your listeners is about a very powerful modeling tool using game theory that came out of the Department of Defense. A political scientist from Claremont University, Jacek Kugler, came to the World Bank in 2004. What this model does is it predicts how coalitions will form, and it's 90 to 95% accurate. And what we have is we have a coalition for the rule of law. And people have been asking me who in the United States is part of that coalition. You've got the National Taxpayers Union. You've got the County Executives of America. You've got people that are following the social media. We're kicking the ball up and down the soccer field with all of the other countries that people are following. Now, this model started predicting that we were going to have rule of law once I and another person from the World Bank named Elaine Colville, she's Scottish. And so we have we've gotten our statements up on the UK Parliament website, three statements. And once that happened, this very accurate model predicted that this group, the coalition, is going to be running the show. And some of the military will call me up and tell me to do things. And, you know, I get kind of angry with them. I say, look, you're the ones that are sitting there. Why are you just letting it all happen? You know, I'm not able to get in into the Department of Defense and take charge. But they're very much reading everything that I post on the internet. And as an example, there's, you know, the Japanese don't have their own military. They rely on the United States.
Sure, yeah.
And there's a group in Japan called the Joint Japan-U.S. Committee under the Status of Forces Agreement. So anybody in the U.S. military that wants to support the rule of law will be able to do that. They're out of the chain of command when they are dealing with that committee. So, for example, I've been receiving emails from the defense attaché in Tokyo. Yeah?
Yes.
So these people are not able to clamp everything down.
So they're trying. So there's a coalition of people, including in Japan, and there's a woman that your colleague that's out of the World Bank in Scotland. Now, who else is in this coalition?
I would have to say that any human being that understands what is actually going on, and that if they're going to try to figure out what the reality is, they have to ignore the mainstream media. I think all of those people are part of this coalition.
Okay, so is there any formal sense of a coalition, or is it basically there's enough people that are becoming aware of what's going on that model says when this many people are aware that, you know, of what's going on, it's going to take over. Is that essentially what you're saying?
Well, I don't know, Sarah, if you're hearing any interference on the line. Is that just in my earphones?
I think it's just in yours.
Yeah, there's interference.
Do you want to, is it really loud?
Yeah, they're trying to distract me. And so I would have to answer your question by saying that coalition for the rule of law is actually running what's going on. Now the interference just stopped. It's
interesting.
It's very interesting how this all works. But so the coalition is really running things. And if you say, well, is it a real coalition? People know about the BRICS, right? Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. Those, and then there's the Group of 77, which is over 130 developing countries.
Yes.
And these groups are just, they're taking decisions that go against what this network for global corporate control. That's what the three Swiss mathematicians call this group. They also call it the super entity.
Well, if there's a World War III, then who would be the sides? The bankers against everyone else? And would it be countries, or would it be you know what I'm saying?
There, first of all, the bankers have been trying every which way to get people launched on World War III, and it's just not working. So they tried that in Syria.
People don't want to. Yes.
Well, because they're exposed. They used to be able to create what people call false flags, and people fell for that trap, but they don't, the mainstream media is no longer convincing. So when people were trying to get the United States to invade Syria, what happened instead was you saw the contributions of the people in the Senate Committee on Foreign Relations that were voting for that. So they're just exposed now. And the people in the United Kingdom refused to be part of that bombing exercise in Syria. So the tools that the bankers used to have are no longer valid.
They're not working.
Because just think of in The Wizard of Oz, think of when Toto the dog pulls back the curtain and you see that there's this wizard and a projection screen. The mainstream media is that projection screen, and people realize that it's all smoke and mirrors. It's not reality.
Well, what you stated that the currency is in the process of being replaced. Can you talk about that? And is it relating to what's going on in Greece and other world events right now?
Absolutely. Because the World Bank, when it was created in 1944, was created for the explicit purpose of having an institution that could decide what to do with the world's monetary gold reserves. And so that group, which is the ministers of finance and development on the board of governors of the World Bank and IMF, they meet twice a year. And then in between, there's something called the Development Committee, which is 25 of the ministers. That's like an executive committee.
Okay.
So this structure, this governance structure, has already decided that what they're going to do is they're going to take the gold that belongs to humanity. It's the country's monetary gold reserves. Mm-hmm. They're going to take some of this gold and they're going to mint it into currency. And it's not going to be gold coins, because you can't go to a grocery store and buy your groceries with something worth $1,000. You have to have, you can't make change for that. So what you have is you have a technology that you spread the gold very, very thin. You put it in a plastic envelope and it handles just like paper currency, but it's the actual amount of gold that's on the face of that bill. And you can also have currency minted out of silver if you want. So what you're going to have is all the countries of the world are going to have precious metals as their currency.
Oh, and interesting.
And it'll be not, the actual, there won't be the need for the money changers because the money will actually be the gold.
That's right. That's just part of the currency. The most important part of the currency is actually local currency. Some communities are already doing that. They call it mountain money or out. What you have is you have the businesses in a local area agreeing that they're going to accept that currency. And then you have full employment overnight.
It really makes a big difference if you can keep your interest, right? And it comes back to helping the people versus going out to private banks.
That's right. And what you, when you have country debt, that's just really a scam. And John F. Kennedy was trying to stop that scam. He had agreed to access the United States gold that was held in the global debt facility. He had signed something called the Green-Hilton Agreement, and 8 days later, he was assassinated. That's why he was killed.
And since then, no one else has tried?
Yes, Ronald Reagan did a study. He commissioned, there's something called the Grace Commission. He wanted to see where the income tax dollars were going. And what they found out was 100% of our income taxes were leaving the country. They were going, first of all, to the United Kingdom, and then about 60% of them were leaving the city of London and going to the Vatican.
Oh, and so, really?
And so Ronald Reagan printed dollars issued by the Treasury Department, and those are they're uncut dollars, and they're held in the global debt facility. That's why John Hinckley shot him. And then they drove Reagan around town in Washington and wouldn't bring him into the hospital. He was bleeding until he promised that he wasn't going to issue that currency.
Really?
Yeah.
And people didn't know that.
Oh, well, some people obviously did.
Did he try to dig into why the Vatican is taking so much of that currency? I mean, what are they doing with it?
Well, the reason that the Vatican is able to do that is because there was a king, King James, back when the Magna Carta was signed. And King James had a war and owed the people that were financing his war were the Vatican. And so he owed this money. And so that was, and he just kept, you know, the money just kept on compounding. But in the meantime, you know, two can play that game. And what happened between World War I and II in the 30s was Yamashita went around collecting gold that was held by the elites and issued them something called Treaty of Versailles bonds, over $200 trillion worth of bonds. They were denominated in gold and they carried interest denominated in gold. That those bonds have continued to compound, and now the bankers actually owe us over $2 quadrillion worth. So this country debt, actually the Bank for International Settlements and the Federal Reserve owe us more money than we owe them.
Really?
So there's not going to be any country debt. And the Board of Governors of the World Bank and IMF have put the Federal Reserve and the rest of the central banks into receivership in the global debt facility. And they know this. We filed, you know what financing statements are when, we've filed financing statements with the secretaries of state in all of the jurisdictions where the Federal Reserve banks are located.
And so are they taking it seriously or what are they doing with that?
That's a great question, Sarah. They're taking it very, very seriously and they're struggling, and in the process of struggling, they're just becoming more and more visible. So one of the things they did was the Secretary of State of Illinois sent me a letter protesting and saying that I had to prove that the financing statement that I had filed against the Federal Reserve of Chicago was valid. So what I did was, of course, I read the statute, and there was a provision that said that if you were a bank that was regulated, you didn't have to prove anything. And the World Bank is regulated by a group called the National Advisory Council on International Financial and Monetary Policies. That's chaired by the Secretary of the Treasury. It's got the chairman of the Federal Reserve on it. It's got the chairman of the SEC on it. Anyway, so I said we were exempt from that provision, but in any event, I was very happy to show the proof. And one of the items of proof that I showed was an offer. The Fed was trying to buy up those Treaty of Versailles bonds. And if those Treaty of Versailles bonds were not valid, why would they try to buy them up? So there, and there were other things that I showed. For example, I showed the list of inventory in the global debt facility. It's quite something. It's not just precious metals. It's got gemstones. It's got artwork. Do you remember there was a case in New York where a Monet painting was sold by the maid of the Marcoses? And she was convicted, and I think she might be doing some jail time now.
Yeah, I remember reading something about
okay,
that.
Those paintings do not belong to the government of the Philippines. Those paintings belong to everyone. They're the world's patrimony in the global debt facility. I wrote a letter to the Philippines embassy saying that they had no right to be claiming those paintings. They didn't belong to them. Yeah. So, yeah. Anyway, so that's just one thing that one of the things that happened. But the International Court of Justice in April issued a notice saying that all of the documents that Ferdinand Marcos had generated were no longer valid. So I wrote back to them and I said, you don't have any jurisdiction. And those documents retain their validity. And then the International Court of Justice took that notice down. But in the meantime, the CIA had issued a document based on the ICJ notice, which then tells us that the CIA is actually not working in the United States' interest, because why would they want to make the monetary gold reserves of the United States invalid? They're obviously not serving the United States' interests. They're serving the interests of this network of global corporate control.
Do you know you say there's four banks or there's four companies that own the Federal Reserve, because we know it's a private institution, and then it goes up to one. Who's really behind that? Is it a family? Is it a collection of families?
All right, you have to go back to Babylonia and see who they call them the bloodlines. So, you know, there are people that say that the Queen of England is so powerful, they also get very mad at the Rothschilds. Now, the Rothschilds are certainly somebody to get angry at, but they're simply Knights of the Garter. And there are the Knights of Malta and other secret societies that are much more influential and powerful. So that's what's behind it.
Interesting. So how do you – but they keep themselves secret.
Well, they're not secret anymore. And as a matter of fact, there's a wonderful book by Galen Ross. I have it right here. I'll get it and read it to you. It's called Who's Who of the Elite, Members of the Bilderbergs, Council on Foreign Relations, Skull and Bone Society, and Trilateral Commission. That's by Robert Galen Ross. And you can go in there and you can read who all these people are. So no, it's not secret. They are very much exposed now.
They're taking our money, and what are they doing with our money?
They are controlling us deliberately. We don't have all the time in the world. We have to replace this paper currency with, first it's going to be these treasury dollars in the United States, and it's going to be other paper currencies from the treasuries in the other countries until we have time to mint the currencies from the precious metals in the global debt facility.
And is it currently in the works now to start doing that?
Yes.
And who's doing it?
Good question. I've been discussing with the Mint Council. There's a representative named Rhonda Sapp, who is a member of the American Federation of Government Employees. And my discussions with her are about that agreement. And if the U.S. Mint doesn't want to mint the gold, then we're just going to go to a regular commercial mint. That's where we are right now.
And just start doing it, and it'll be gold. So people will use it.
Well, you know, I don't want to get into the technical nitty gritty. I don't want to bore people, but the U.S. Treasury Department is actually part of this company. What they did was in the 1870s, the bankers created a second secret constitution. And so the federal government, the judges are actually on the federal bench. What they do is they say their oath of office, and then they turn around and instead of presiding over the courts that are guaranteed to us under our regular constitution, they preside over secret administrative courts.
Wow.
And the way they do that is when you sign your specimen signature at a bank, there's a little provision that says subject to bank rules. And if you look to see what those bank rules are, it says, I waive my right to the constitutional courts.
And yeah, it does say that stuff. It's
and
bad.
When you go into one of these administrative courts, they're not even looking at you as if you were a regular human being. They're looking at you as if you were a little company that they create whenever your mother gives you a birth certificate. They've got the lawyers totally bamboozled that are part of this. The lawyers are, many of them don't realize about this huge, colossal scam. And many of the ones that do just sort of sit there and go along with it. But the other professions are almost as bad. So the accountants, same thing. They have the accountants policing the other accountants. They should never do that. The journalists are also completely complicit with this, this terrible corruption. And it's just been going on and on. And everybody thought that since they were all, you know, one hand was washing the other, that it was too powerful and it was never going to be dismantled. And they underestimated what people were able to do. And we've run rings around those crooks.
And do you have the other constitution? Can people go and read it?
Yes. What you do is you look to see, for example, you can see how the Social Security Act is actually a statute in the United Kingdom. Why should that be? There's a study group that looked at the state house records in South Carolina. I have that, you know, because I've been vocal. A lot of people have been sending me all kinds of documents that back up every single thing I'm saying.
Interesting. And you have that all on your website. So if people want to look, they can see all those documents.
Well, I've been working on this problem along with a lot of other people for a long time. What I have on my website is the correspondence from the lawsuit. I went and bought a World Bank bond and then I sued in the federal courts. So you can see that documentation. But since then, I've put a lot of stuff out on the internet using the social media. So, you know, anybody that wants to send me an email and ask me a question, I'm happy to refer them to the places where they can find the various documents. One of the things is that when I put things up in one particular place, it's usually hacked. So I don't want to be vulnerable and have just one site where where all these documents can be taken down. But the Secret Service, for example, tried to accuse me of cyber crimes and get me off the internet. And I was I complained about it to Ike Leggett. I live in Montgomery County, Maryland. He's Ike Leggett is the president pro tem of the County Executives of America. And the Montgomery County Police, you know, they came to my house when I complained about this and they said, no, Karen, there's no justification for taking you off the internet. And so I'm very much on the internet still. And it's actually the County Executives of America that have accepted the monetary gold reserves of the United States on behalf of the U.S. citizens.
So why do you think they're letting you live?
Well, it's really very simple, because I'm just part of a coalition. I'm revealing a cover-up. There is not a single day that goes by that I don't tell everybody everything I know. So anybody can pick up the pieces from where I've left off. There's no magic to what I'm doing. I'm just flailing around like anybody would. And, you know, I get mowed down. The next person is going to come in my place. And there'll be a lot of people that are going to be pretty angry because people know that I'm, you know, I'm just working on behalf of everybody. I'm not doing anything special. And I'm, you know, that's the long and short of it. There's been a cover up that I've been reporting, and that cover up is going to continue with or without me.
Can you explain a little bit about, just so people understand, how the world, first do this. Explain what the World Bank is, what the IMF is, and how the Federal Reserve and the United States all relates to that.
Okay. The World Bank and the IMF are just a cooperative of all the countries of the world. And it's got a very special structure, different from most of the other organizations you're going to see, because you're not going to have one country, one vote. The votes are weighted by the size of the economy. So the U.S. is the biggest economy, and so we have 16% of the vote. And then you've got the other countries that are, for example, I think Germany has 8% of the votes. And in addition to having this board of executive you've got the board of governors, which is each country, and they come together twice a year, but you've got a resident board that runs the place. And that's now 25. It started out with 12 countries and, or I'm sorry, 12 executive directors. And the eight biggest economies each get their dedicated executive director, but the others are working for groups of countries. They're called constituencies. So this is actually supposed to be representing all of humanity. And what happened was there was something called state capture, which is to say that the organization was corrupted. And instead of being run by the board, which is the way it's supposed to happen, it started to be run by the president of the World Bank, or in the case of the International Monetary Fund, that's the managing director. And it used to be that there was a gentleman's agreement that the U.S. was simply allowed to name the president of the World Bank and the Europeans could simply name the managing director of the IMF. But that went away after 66 years because of the corruption. And actually, this very powerful political science modeling tool that I was telling you about, it predicted that that was going to happen if the United States was going to be dominated by this network of global corporate control. So what you have is you have an organization, the World Bank and the IMF, that's actually being dominated by the network of global corporate control, but that's not going to continue very much longer. Not going to continue, I would say, beyond this month.
So how did the United States, who had the power to take that away from them? Who had the power to take the United States' ability to name the world president away from them? Was it the board?
But this was just an agreement. It wasn't written down anywhere. And I warned the United States that this was going to happen.
And so how did it happen? The board voted on it or something? Or they just got mad and said, you're not going to do it anymore? Some members of the board? Or what happened?
Okay. People are people. So let me tell you how it happened. Do you remember Eliot Spitzer, the governor of New York?
Yes.
Who lost his position because he went to the New York Madam?
Yes.
Now, Paul Wolfowitz became the president of the World Bank, and he had a girlfriend inside the World Bank named Shahariza. And when he went into the World Bank, he gave Shaha a 30% raise, and the board got very angry, and they tried to fire him. And the man that they put in charge of doing that was the executive director for the Netherlands, Herman Wijfels. And I speak Dutch because I studied development economics in Holland. So I happened to be in Holland when Herman Wijfels went on record in a Dutch newspaper saying that the executive directors were being threatened for trying to fire Paul Wolfowitz, that any of the executive directors that went to that New York Madam were being told that that was going to be made public. And then the day after that, Herman Wijfels had a predecessor who was his name was Ad Melkert, who at that point had gone to the UNDP. And so they interviewed Ad on the TV and they said, Ad, were you being threatened? that you were going to be blackmailed? And Ad said, well, I'm a boring guy, but I knew other people on the board that were being threatened. So when I found this out, I went back to the Congress and I said, you know, I knew I had already been telling people that we were going to lose the gentleman's agreement and that we had to clean up our act. And so I went to I was working primarily with the Senate Committee on Foreign Relations, which it was chaired by Joe Biden. It had two junior senators on there, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. I met with their staff and I warned them. And then they told me that I should go to the Treasury Department and tell them what I was talking about. So I went to a guy named Kenneth Peel in the Treasury Department. I said, you've got to be out of your mind to be threatening the executive directors when you're going to lose the gentleman's agreement. And they, you know, they just poo-pooed what I was warning them about, and they kept going, and they lost the gentleman's agreement.
Well, then now how was the World Bank president determined? The board comes up with it?
Well, there's something called a Committee on Governance, and they, in the last time when Jim Kim actually became the president, there were other candidates. They weren't actually such brilliant candidates, the others. They were also, but, you know, Tweedledum and Tweedledee. But yeah, so now it's not just the U.S. has its pick. They have to jump through some hoops.
So what does this mean for the United States not to have this power? How does this hurt us?
Well, at the moment, we are now in something that I call interregnum, which is to say that the United States is no longer governed the way it's supposed to be governed. There's an Article 5 of the Constitution, which says when 2/3 of the state legislatures ask for an amendment, there's supposed to be a convention. And then the recommendations of the convention have to go and be ratified by 3/4 of the states. So we've had more than 2/3 of the state legislatures request an amendment, but we haven't had our convention. So we are now, we're actually under martial law. We were put under martial law by Abraham Lincoln, and the Congress behind closed doors has extended that state of emergency without bothering to tell anybody. They've also been told that they're managers of this second corporation of the United States under the second secret constitution. So you've got this very terrible arrangement that people don't know. We're clueless.
Well, how do all these Congress people accept that? They go into office and they all accept it?
That's right, and nobody spills the beans.
But how do they get this many people to accept it?
Well, there are all kinds of, you know, it's called the carrot and the stick.
Well, do they not let them, do they tell them before they run for office that there's going to be certain secrets that you're going to have to maintain, and if you don't agree to that now, we won't even back you?
You can see what happens to the congressmen and senators that don't toe the line. All of a sudden, there are appealing candidates with unlimited campaign funds. During the last presidential election, I tried to disclose a lot of what I'm telling you to the public. And the media is all controlled by this network of global corporate control. I couldn't break through. So it's, you know, it's a combination. It's also the fact that people know that it's going to be very difficult to get the word out, that they're going to be swimming upstream. There are not that many people that have a strong appetite for being a whistleblower. It's an acquired taste, I can tell you, Sarah.
Well, you're considered a whistleblower.
I know what I'm talking about.
You worked at the World Bank for 20 years, right, as an attorney, as their lawyer, World Bank lawyer. What was your role there?
For the first 10 years, I was doing something called country lawyer, which is I was going to the various countries and working on different projects. And the last country I was assigned to, I would go there, I would find corruption, I would report it, and then I would get reassigned. So the next to the last country was the Philippines, and then I was reassigned to Africa after I started reporting corruption in the Philippines. But so that was 10 years. And then the next 10 years, I was working on different projects. I would get funding and I was working on judicial reform projects, projects for gender equality. There was a lot, there was a lot of good stuff to work on at the World Bank.
So the World Bank does do good work.
Yes, but it's subject to state capture. And in those countries where the governments themselves are good, you'll have good projects. But in those countries where the bankers are very much in control, you'll have projects that aren't really owned by the countries, that are, you know, that are for the interests of the bankers. So it's a mixed bag is the best way to describe it.
Yeah, I can understand that. So it depends on who's in power and what's going on. So yeah. How can people learn more about this and figure out what's really going on?
What I tell people is a good idea is to get into a group like a study group, like a book club, people that you enjoy discussing these things with, and to just start learning as and take local projects on as well. Clean up your local community, get local currency in your local community. You have to learn something called critical thinking, which is don't turn on the mainstream media and listen to the news and say, oh, now I know what's going on. You have to do an analysis to see who owns the news. Do they have their own agenda? You have to compare and contrast what you're hearing. You have to learn to be a critical thinker.
Where does ISIS come into this? And
it's just you cannot accept at face value anything that you're told in the mainstream media. Those are mercenaries.
Is it a fabricated war?
Yes.
That's created to try to suck everybody into World War III?
Yes.
Now, what would World War III accomplish for them?
Divide and conquer.
And then that way they could still maintain their power?
That's right. But we're on to them. They've lost all shred of control. I try to see the way this coalition works, the Coalition for the Rule of Law, is that we're all just working as hard as we can at what seems important, our own priorities.
Exactly.
So whoever... There's no one person in the control room for this network, for the coalition, for the rule of law. We're just all struggling as best we can figure out how. But in the network of global corporate control, yes, there is somebody in the control room, and they have got to fight against each and every one of us. They are just, it's gotten really out of hand. They've totally lost it.
Well, what are they going to do with every country having so much debt? I mean, how are they going to solve that problem? I mean,
but Sarah, those countries that owe money, it's offset against what those bankers owe us.
Well, I know that. That's what you've established. Okay.
That's right.
And there's documentation to do that. But in their minds and how it's projected is that there's so much debt and there isn't anything that's offsetting it.
And but Sarah, that nobody is paying any attention to them. So I called up the person who represented Greece at the World Bank. Mm-hmm. And I said, you guys just hang in there because we are all backing you. We all know that this country debt is a scam. And there's no reason for your people in Greece to be having all of their resources siphoned away by these bankers when the bankers owe us more than we owe them.
Okay, so... Well, do you think that's going to, with Greece, do you think it's going to come to a head and they're actually going to win? Because if Greece wins and that comes to a head and that gets exposed, then it gets exposed everywhere.
Yes, Sarah. And the whole coalition is backing Greece and they know it.
So Greece is kind of the what do you call it? That they're on the world stage, obviously, but they're the source of everything. They're the core.
Yes, but it's also the way I explained to you, Sarah. It's not just Greece. Everybody.
No. That's what I mean. Everybody's involved, but Greece is the core in the sense that whatever happens with Greece could happen everywhere.
That's right. And so there's no reason for Greece to be sacrificed. You know, you have to draw a line in the sand somewhere. And yes, we've drawn the line in the sand somewhere.
And that's Greece. Now,
well, no, it's not just Greece, but it is Greece.
Sure, exactly. So, but you know, a lot of people are really hurting in Greece, and a lot of people are really struggling. You know, there's a lot of suicides, a lot of poverty. People are probably dying of just not having right medicine. So how long do you think the Greece people can withstand this type of environment before they, you know, buckle?
What I have said back on the 31st of May, I tweeted that we have come about, that we have drawn the line in the sand, and that we are we're headed in the exact opposite direction from the network of global corporate control. And just stay tuned and see whether that is the case. I personally think it is.
Okay, it's very interesting. Okay, so now as we wrap up here, how can people get information? Because people are going to want to go. Okay. I mean, there's so many things that they've never heard before in this interview, obviously. So how can people get information to be able to back up some of this stuff? You have a lot on your website. And is there so much on the internet isn't reliable, right? And so how can they get to reliable information that doesn't seem goofy, that they can read and go, okay, this makes sense to me?
Okay, that's where we get back to this study group that I was talking about, Sarah. People have got to learn to be discerning and to know when they're being given accurate information and when they're not. And they cannot just go to one place and say, okay, now that I found the right place, I can just sort of sit here and passively accept whatever that person tells me. No, you have got to learn how to be discerning. And probably the most important thing that you have to learn is you have to learn when you're lying to yourself. And that's not an easy thing. You have to find a good friend who will tell you. They'll know you very well, and they'll know when you're not letting yourself figure out what's going on. You have to become a reliable person and understand what is true and what isn't true. And you have to learn when you're not letting yourself know what's really going on. And that's a lot of work. A lot of people don't want to learn that. If you're not willing to learn that, nobody can help you.
Well, you know what? Thank you so much for joining me today. I think this has been a very interesting and eye-opening conversation. I'm pretty confident that there's a big chunk of our listeners that haven't heard some of these things that you've been talking about. Like I said, I think they just need to go and do some research on their own and come up with their own conclusions. But it's really great having somebody out there like you who's not afraid to go after it and to figure it out.
Thanks.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Karen, and you have a wonderful day.
You too.
I know there was a lot of bombshells that she brought to the table, and some of it made me uneasy because I really don't know. I'm not an insider like she is, and it's scary to hear that much corruption. And I, you know, just based on my own experience, I know there's a lot of corruption out there. But, you know, when you hear it from an insider, it just is that much more impactful. And, you know, it's kind of daunting and it's kind of sad. And you know, it's something that we all need to wake up to. I don't know what is true, but she claims she has all the proof in the documents. So if you're really interested in that, I recommend you following up with her and really diving into this. Like she said, the one thing she did say is to really question things and to have an open mind and to really learn about what's going on out there. We're only going to fix this situation if we all get together and try to figure it out and learn. You know, we might all come from different backgrounds. You might be a Republican, Democrat, Libertarian, but I don't know any good person out there that likes corruption and believes that corruption is something that's going to help us. You know, whether you're a socialist or a libertarian, kind of two different ends of the spectrum, corruption destroys every environment. And anything that we can do and educate ourselves over, we will be that much better as a society. So please take her up on that offer and look into the document she has and see what you believe is true and not true. Regardless, there's a lot of information out there, and you know, be careful because some of it's crap. But if we don't educate ourselves, we're going to get what we deserve. Okay, now we're going to welcome Thomas McGrath, who is the founder of Social Sweepster, and he's going to talk about this really cool tool he has to help people clean up their online presence.
Sounds good.
Hi, Tom. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks, Sarah. It's great to be on here.
Well, you have a program, a tool called Social Sweepster. which is a tool to help you monitor and clean up your online social presence using advanced image recognition technology. How does that work?
So it really works in three steps. So you come to our website, socialsweetster.com, create an account. You essentially grant us access to your different social media profiles, whether it be Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. We've then basically trained our software, our computers, to recognize objects and keywords such as profanities and things like solo cups, beer cans, beer bottles, to be recognized by our software very much the way in which a human does it. So in a sense, it's kind of like artificial intelligence. And from there, once we've kind of pulled those results, we allow you to review them in kind of a Pinterest-esque type of format, and you can go through and, you know, decide what you'd like to keep and what you don't want to keep. And it kind of goes from there, yeah.
So if a parent is really concerned that their partying teenager is going to be in trouble when they try to get their job or their college kid, they could help come to you and help them get rid of all those nasty things on Facebook, Twitter, any kind of sexuality, profanity. How about sexual kind of stuff? Like if they're not wearing
enough. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the cool things that we do have as a part of our application is the ability to add things like custom keywords. So there's actually people who are, you know, even more concerned about any political affiliations they might have mentioned on social media, or perhaps even they don't want mentions of intimate relationships that they've had with other people. And so you can actually put in a list of keywords such as Republican or a boyfriend's name or a girlfriend's name, and we can scan for those things and allow you to erase those and manage those posts as well. So there's a certain level of flexibility within the system as well.
Oh, so you can hide things. How about like foreclosures and credit issues, bankruptcies, all those kinds of things?
Mm-hmm. So from that respect, I do know that actually a lot of people are looking into using social media as a means to do things like credit scoring. There's actually a company called Repware that was absorbed by Equifax recently. They're a big credit scoring company, so I know that's going to play a role. Even in insurance claims, too. I mean, I think that you can expect to see that people will adjust your insurance rates and even investigate claims by, let's say, you know, looking to see if you're smoking cigarettes on Facebook when you told your life insurance provider that you don't smoke cigarettes or, you know, that you're engaging in dangerous activities like skydiving.
Mm-hmm. Or if you tell your employer you're on vacation and the next thing you know, you're on the front page news.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I mean, there's people going as far as IBM, I know, actually have the ability to go through your full Twitter history and assign a personality type to you. They can see if you're a generous person, you're a humorous person, a real team player. And so you're going to see employers start to use this technology to even determine kind of your personality type and see if you're going to be a good cultural fit for their organization.
Now, and this just works on like social websites where you can actually go in and delete things, right? Like Facebook, Twitter. What happens with like media outlets where there's actual, you know, articles about something?
So, I mean, we don't really do anything with that. We do have the ability, we leverage something called Google's reverse image search. So if we find something on social media, we do have a way to see if that exists elsewhere in the Google search results. We are working towards kind of sending automated takedown messages if it's something that you don't want out there. But there are a lot of great services. One that I've been talking to recently called brandyourself.com. That does something called reverse search engine optimization, where you can't necessarily delete those things, but you can bury them further down in the search results and highlight things that you want to show up.
Well, how do you highlight and bury? I mean, because I would like to highlight things that are, you know, the more nice stuff about myself I'd like to have way highlighted, and just some doopy stuff you don't want ever to come up.
Yeah, I mean, the whole search engine optimization thing, I'm not an expert on it, but a lot of it is just really producing high-quality content. So Google is going to show the things that are from the New York Times and that, you know, are linked to other reputable websites. So, you know, if you throw them the Social Sweetster link on your website and people get a lot of traffic to that site, my site's going to show up as being more reputable when someone searches social media management.
Okay.
So I would definitely tell, you know, listeners to check out, you know, sites like brandyourself.com to learn more about that type of thing.
Okay, but meanwhile, I mean, kids are having the social, I mean, it's a problem with young kids and the stuff they put up. So it's a really good tool for young college kids, people who are trying to get their first job, parents who have kids that are going, you know, in college, to really get their kid to clean up their social networking sites and what they have, because it could be years, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Facebook's been around for, I think, close to 10 years now. This recent report came out, too, says 91% of recruiters are actually looking at social media. 69% have rejected a candidate because of something that they found. So there's definitely a need to have those things cleaned up. And not only that, but I think it's also about creating an opportunity to highlight the good things about yourself. You know, it's not always that these recruiters at, you know, corporations and universities are looking for bad things. They're looking for good things, too. So, you know, if you're the type of person who says, oh, I'm just going to hide my Facebook and put all my privacy settings up so they can't find me, that's just as hurtful in my mind. So it makes a lot of sense to go clean it up and then, you know, highlight different activities that you're doing, different organizations that you're involved with.
Oh, that's great. So, so pretty much cleaning it up is really important, highlighting and pushing down the negative, pushing up the positive. And it's just really important in today's online world to have a presence that's really professional and cleaned up. How many college kids do you think are in this situation where they have a problem sitting out there?
I mean, I can say anecdotally, I think that upwards of 90%, I think everyone's got something out there that could, you know, raise some eyebrows, at least, you know, within my friend group, you know, whether, and it may not necessarily be you. You can be judged a lot of times by what your friends are doing. So something that a friend posted on your Facebook wall or your Twitter, it doesn't necessarily have to be something that you did. Necessarily.
And you can, your application can literally scan photos for a can of beer or a bottle of beer or a joint or something like that. And so those things can, you, now does it automatically remove them for you too?
No. So, you know, what is considered bad, I think, is pretty subjective. So for someone like me, you know, I'm 24 years old now, I'm sitting in a picture with a bottle of beer at a family party. Some people don't necessarily think that's bad. So we err on the side of caution. We're going to flag those things regardless. And then, like I said, we give you the opportunity to review the results before you go ahead and delete them.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you're 35 and you have a beer in your hand, I mean,
yeah.
I mean, come on. Most people do that, right? And if you're younger and you're drinking age, that's not necessarily bad. It's just if you're always doing that and you're always posting pictures of you out at bars, then it puts an image of you being just not a very responsible person.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, this is awesome. So how expensive is it?
It's pretty affordable. It's actually about $5. We also offer gift cards too if you're a parent who wants to get it for, you know, a niece, a nephew, a son. So yeah, it's honestly what I tell people is, you know, for the price of you know, a Starbucks latte that you're getting every day, you can, you know, ensure that, you know, all the hard work you put in, you know, college or high school, the tuitions you paid aren't jeopardized. So it just, I mean, for me, it's kind of a no-brainer.
Yeah, it's kind of a cheap thing to just help yourself out. So now, is it $5 using forever, or is it just you can use it for the month, or how does that work?
So it's usually a one-time thing. I mean, we usually find that people, they go through, they do the cleanup, and for the most part, they follow good practices moving forward. We do allow you to buy in bulk as well. So the price does go back down if you wanted to buy 6 scans or 8 scans or whatever the case may be. But we usually see that people buy one for $5, and they follow good practices moving forward.
Oh, this is actually a really useful tool for a lot of people. So now if people want to learn more about it, where do they go?
Yeah, I would say just go to the Social Sweepster website. It's just socialsweepster.com. There's plenty of information on there. We also have a really great blog with a lot of information relevant to, you know, social media, but also the job search as well. So I would definitely recommend checking that out as well.
Okay, that's really great. And I'll have your information up on the radio page and my website so people can know how to get hold of you as well. This is really great. And I know you're an entrepreneur at heart, and so you're creating all sorts of different things, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. You have a good future. This is a great little idea. It's not a little idea. It's a big idea. And I can't tell you how many of my friends. I have a son who's going to college this year, and And I can't tell you how many people who have kids, you know, my son's age, who would be, this might be a good thing for me to look into. And even if your kid's pretty clean, you just don't know who they're being associating with and who, you know, how that'll go across. So this is really great. Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, no problem. And one helpful tip I just want to leave everyone with is actually recruiters all the time, the biggest problem I've seen them have is not necessarily with pictures or profanity. It's actually grammar, knowing that you have good communication skills. So, underestimate that.
And you find that too. So if you spell things wrong or you just are awful at wording things, you'll find that.
So it's something that we're working on right now. Yes. Not something that's currently implemented, but I just wanted everyone to know.
Oh, fantastic though. Very good. You need to keep in contact with me because I'm always doing, you know, it's business game changers. I'm always looking for disruptive technology and new things, and finding an entrepreneur like you is fun. So keep me in contact with the stuff that you're doing.
Will do. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Sarah. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
I am currently redoing my website, and what I am doing is it's going to allow me to post videos and, you know, audio and videos up on my website directly. So I'm going to have exclusive content that's not up on Web Talk Radio and that's not up on iTunes and other places. It's just going to be on my website for the extended versions of some of these interviews, like the Karen Hudis interview. I have another 10 to 15 minutes that will be up there. So if you want to hear the full uncut version of that interview, I also have some upcoming shows that I am doing that will air on Web Talk Radio, iTunes, and Stitcher, but it will not have the full uncut version. So I'll have the remainder of that and some other exclusive content on my website. So please go there and see some of this stuff. The website should be up and running third week for sure by the end of July. So you will be able to get to that by then. And also, my website always has the contact information for every guest I have on the show so that you can go in there, dig in, learn, find more information, and contact them and find out for yourself what's going on. I try to bring really impactful events and important things to everyone's attention. So the best thing is to dig in and try to learn on your own. Okay, so for now, everyone have a wonderful day.